It's Wednesday, the 2nd of October, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're back this week to look at a Devils four-point weekend, bouncing back from the disappointment of the previous weekend. We'll be discussing all the action of the games, as well as the trial of the standing section in Block 13 in the home game. We'll do our player of the week as ever. Ramite and burning questions have been coming in, and we'll go through all of those before we look at any news around the league, the future of standing in Cardiff, and then a preview of upcoming games against Manchester, Coventry, and the massive CHL game over in Fulunda. So to get started, we'll go back to Saturday. It was a Challenge Cup game, and it was Coventry coming to Cardiff and the standing section. So before we get onto that, we'll just talk about the game. And Sean, for a game after a really disappointing weekend with all the hype around the noise of the standing section, started pretty flat from the
we didn't come out of the blocks very well. I thought the first 6-7 minutes were very static. We looked a little bit bit shell shocked, didn't really know how to get into the game, and that was frustrating. But we sort of, I think the goal against came at a really good time because we realised we had to sort of pick ourselves up and do something, and that for me that was a really important thing in the game for us.
Yeah, a bit of power play trouble put the Blaze in the lead just on the 11 minute mark. But Aaron, as Sean said, a big bounce back from the Devils and a bit of a wake-up call, and you have five unanswered goals through the rest of the game to seal a 5-1 win. What were your thoughts on the performance as a whole?
Yeah, I think game was over in the second period. You know, we scored three quick goals in within just over a minute, and it was literally dead and buried after that. I couldn't see Coventry coming back, and, you know, the guys picked it up. We was, you know, at one period in time, I don't think we scored, but we was constantly, you know, deep in their end, and they were struggling to get turnovers. I think they called a timeout halfway through the second as well. And Coventry just seemed out of ideas. I'm glad we, you know, turned around, and yeah, seemed like a good performance. A couple of things we could have picked up on, like that power play goal in the first. We just let David Ball skate through the easiest I've ever seen in my entire life. It was literally the entire left side of the ice was free. And, you know, good shot, he scores. But other than that, you know, turned back on and seemed to sail through all the way through the rest of the game easy.
Yeah, worth noting as well, it was marked the return of our captain, Joey Martin, to the lineup as well.
Yeah, obviously, you're just such a huge difference maker, and you're just having him back on the ice, which makes everything feel that much better. But as for the theme of the season, we're seemingly never going to play with four centres. Mike McNamee joining Evan Mosey and Blair Riley on the injured list. So, Devils still icing one important short. Swapping McNamee out for Joey Martin. So still not having that. Our four recognised centres on the ice at the same time, which would be nice to have in, you know, the week we've got coming up at the very least. Before we move on to the Sheffield game, and we will talk about the future of it a little bit further on, but mentioned it was the standing section. Sean and myself joined the standing section, and you know, I think we both tweeted about our enjoyment of it. So interested to get Aaron's thoughts. So you sit in block 8, I think, Aaron, and you know, what were your thoughts on, you know, the way the noise that the block made, but how it affected the atmosphere in the rink as a whole?
It was good. I do think it ended well, better than it started. For me, at the start, it felt like there was a block of away fans, and until like the rest of the rink got involved, you know, I think that's when the atmosphere really picked up. I heard a lot of people say that they couldn't hear it on the bottom end of the rink, but I didn't have no problem. I thought it was good, and you know, it was just nice to hear a couple of different songs, you see the flags flying and stuff. You know, it really felt like an occasion brought to the game, and yeah, I did enjoy it, I'll be honest.
Excellent. And yeah, worth noting that the Challenge Cup this year, that the games are quite unimportant, so you know, that's a game that's not massively, you know, it wasn't vital. And obviously I think those three goals in the second period really helped lift the atmosphere. I think I raised last week probably the point around, you know, making noise isn't the same as having an atmosphere. And you know, Sean, for me, when those three goals went in, that's where the atmosphere was. There was a return of goalie baiting, and I love a bit of goalie baiting. I really enjoyed shouting at the blaze there. But you know, that was the only time there was atmosphere. But you know, as a skeptic, I was a convert by the middle of the second period. I had such a blast. I thought it was a great fun. I think I forget sometimes how much I enjoyed chanting and cheering and just doing stuff like that. And because we don't do it that often at home. I absolutely loved it. And Sean, I'm pretty sure you're going to have a similar glowing review from the I think you're up to about 106 tweets now, is it, about it since Saturday?
Something like that. Yeah, no, after the first period, I had a couple of reservations. The noise to start the game when the guys were coming out on the ice and doing I couldn't hear Todd announce the players going forward because there was that much noise and that much chanting going on, and the anthem sounded great. Overall, I thought it worked really well. End of the first, I thought the way we played might have let it dip a little bit, but come the middle of the second period, I think everyone realised that it wasn't as loud as we quite needed to be, and just took it up another level. And it was great. The goalie baiting was great fun. And I must say, I haven't enjoyed an atmosphere at home like that for a long, long time. CHL games accepted, mainly because I've normally been up on the gantry with you absolutely losing my mind, but I just thought it was just great. I absolutely loved it. And a couple of people, Paul, who I've spoken to since then, actually wanted me to point out on the podcast how much you enjoyed it. They were stood nearby you and they said, "We know Paul was a skeptic and he absolutely loved it." And we could tell by the look on his face. So I'm just wanting to make that point yet again.
Yeah, there was literally no way I could have no-sold it the way I went in the third. So, and I do think, sort of same as the atmosphere grow, I think that was part of maybe not everyone in the block knew all the songs, so they were picking up the words. Different blocks historically sing chants at different rates, which has, you know, caused various issues probably for the drummers especially. But you know, I think it was people getting into like sync, and you know, that'll grow around the rink. You know, I know a few people didn't know the words for a lot of the chants at the other end of the rink because you're never going to understand words from 8 blocks away. But if the block next to it picks it up, and then the block next to it will pick it up, and you know, they're shared on social media, it'll grow quite quickly. And yeah, it was good to hear Aaron say that, you know, the rest of the rink was joining in because that block was so loud you genuinely couldn't tell if there was any noise coming from anywhere else because it just felt like it was all coming from where we were. Absolutely loved it. And I will give a shout out to your new drum, the way that carried around the rink. I went over to the Red Army Travel Desk at the end of the 2 periods, like while the game was still going on, and the drum beat just reached, you know, it couldn't be further away, the travel desk in the arena, and it just carried, and I thought that really helped as well. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to doing it again. But before we talk about doing it again, let's talk about Sheffield. Let's try and keep some sort of semblance of order here. Back to league action after a couple of Challenge Cup games in the row. And, you know, huge game. Sheffield team, you know, have not started brilliantly, probably not massively surprising either, given the massive turnover of playing staff that they've had there. The Devils ran out 3-2 victors, took the lead twice, both times let Sheffield back in within sort of 10 minutes before the go-ahead goal just at the end of a power play with about 7 minutes left, and the Devils held on. Sean, looking at the game as a whole, you know, we obviously watched it together, so you know, it just felt like two teams not performing as well as either of them could. And, you know, I wouldn't want to make a judgment going forward on which team's got the more potential, I don't think. What's your thoughts?
No, I think that's a fair way to look at it. It didn't look like two of the most skillful teams in the league. It was quite chippy, a lot of broken plays, and it just didn't look like two high quality teams. The puck was bobbling all over the place. Passes weren't crisp. The speed, I will say it was a fast game. It was very, very speedy. Both sets of teams, have got unreal amounts of speed in them. And I gotta be honest, if it wasn't for the speed of the players on both those teams, it would have been a very, very dull game because, like I just said, there wasn't a great deal of quality there. You look at the goals that were scored, with the exception of Valorant's breakaway, there's not a great deal in there, of skill. Goaltending wise, I thought Bouncy was decent, didn't have a great deal to do, but Sheffield's goalie made some massive saves, but I thought we were going to absolutely, on another night, we'd have absolutely pumped them because he just did not look very confident off the, you know, in terms of handling the puck. I can't remember seeing someone like that since Steve Lyle. Overall,
I'd be chipping the puck behind the net constantly from distance to try and force him out of his crease. If plan A isn't working, that would be my plan B, C and D in Sheffield. To try and get to a play of the puck, because you're right, I've not seen someone look that shaky on the puck. I think he might look worse than Stevie Lyle, to be honest.
I think overall it was a well refereed game. Didn't have any complaints on that side of things other than Stefan Ogoff being in the way continuously, but you know, what's new? We didn't fall behind at all. We led on all three occasions. So, greasy win. Not the most convincing, but we did enough to come out there with 2 points and stop Sheffield getting two. So, massive result.
Yeah. Oh, and there's not many places that are more fun to win in than Sheffield. Just, and as you said, it just takes a few more points off, and they've dropped three. You know, they've won three, lost three of their league games so far.
They've lost three at home.
All three, and obviously to ourselves, but I think it's definitely Coventry and
ourselves, Coventry and Glasgow.
Yeah, after they beat us as well. So, you know, and Glasgow with another 4-point weekend against Nottingham this weekend. So, that defeat to them at home doesn't look quite so terrible when you look at the results they've had since. It seems like there's a decent team in Glasgow at the moment. So yeah, that was the weekend. 4 points for the Devils, and a very welcome 4 points they were as well. Let's do a player of the week, and I haven't gone first yet this season, so I'm going to go first. And my pick goes to Joey Haddad, who had a couple of storming games. That game in Sheffield was, you know, Sean said it got a bit chippy at times. It wasn't a fast flowing game, and you'll feel like that. They're the games that sometimes you need your gritty players to step up. And you know, Joey Haddad did with the first goal of the night, and getting a tip on Longley's shot for the game winning goal as well to make it a good 2-goal night for him in Sheffield. So Joey Haddad gets my pick. Aaron, only seeing Saturday's game, who's your selection for this week's player of the week?
I think I'll go with Joey Martin for me. I only seen him play the one game, and considering he's been out and hasn't really played a competitive game since April last year, he fitted straight into the lineup. Looked like he never missed a beat, and you know, grabbed the first goal, got us going, and you know, looked like the Joey Martin we know and love. But Joey Martin, easy choice, really.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone, and Joey Martin there. Sean, do we have a winner this week?
We do. I'm going to go with Joey Haddad as well. I thought in the Coventry game he was excellent. just did a lot of things right, played some good passes. And in Sheffield, like you said, got that one of those goals early on with the rebound, and then he's actually been credited for the game-winning goal as well. So, and there was just stages where he held the puck in the corners, and when we were struggling to gain the zone, and we were gaining it, normally through Gleeson Fournier, he was the one holding it up high in the corners for us to get set. And I didn't have any other contender. As soon as we were talking about this before the show, I couldn't think of anyone else other than Joey Haddad.
Excellent. Congratulations to Joey Haddad, this week's Player of the Week. Let's go to social media, Sean. I believe, again, we've had some really good submissions, so thank you to everyone. I think we've got a Rahmite submission from Michael Brainer.
We do. We have hashtag Rahmite from Michael Brain, at Michael Brain 55. His Rahmite was he hated not being in block 13 and loved block 13 winding up Phillips. Hashtag next time I'm there. Paul, someone to join you with a goalie, enjoying the goalie bait in there.
Excellent. I don't think it was the two of us that were enjoying it. It seemed quite widely. And it's Phyllis, not Phillips, if anyone joins in the next time commentary. So we had a burning question last week that we didn't have time to get round from Pat Vance, Sean.
We did indeed. Pat Vance asked us, I gotta go and find it here again. Here you go. So he's at Pat, I think it's Saren Vance, at Pat Saren Vance. In Todd's interview, he talked about contracts and stated that if some players weren't on contract, they would have gone elsewhere. Who do we think he refers to, etc.? Paul, straight to you on that one.
To be honest, I've not seen the interview, so I'm not quite sure of the context as to whether that's over the off season or during the season. I would guess it's during the season. I think the two obvious suggestions of players that probably didn't perform last year as expected were Matt Pope and Mike Hedden. Matt Pope obviously re-signed as part of his second year of his deal as announced by Andrew Lord. So, potentially referring to the off season, but I would have thought he'd have been talking about within season. And I think Mike Hedden would probably be the obvious candidate to go alongside that. He was one of his players. As soon as the CHL finished, it looked as if he couldn't be bothered pretty much until playoffs rolled around. I thought his body language on the ice was poor. I think his body language on the bench at times was even worse. Really not someone that, for all of his skill, he did put up a decent number of points, no doubt about it. But everything that I saw of him made me think that's not someone I want in a Cardiff Devils shirt again. So, that would be my guess.
Aaron, thoughts?
Same. Who else could it have been about, really? For me, them two are the really big standouts who didn't have a great year, and there's a couple of guys in the team that left that potentially should have stayed instead of, one of the players mentioned. And, Paul hit the nail on the head, really.
Just to add that, obviously, Matt Pope has returned, and I think he's one of the players that we discussed at length a couple of weeks ago in terms of returning players and that have shown the biggest improvements. So, that's working out quite well for us at the moment. So, long may it continue.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's go on to our next question, our next hashtag burning question from Lewis Hawkins. So Lewis asks, this is not aimed at any player, but only asked out of curiosity. If a player plays so consistently bad and in some way jeopardizes the way the team plays, should the Devils ever release a player in contract, or do we keep our reputation of always retaining players? Aaron, I'm going to go to you first on that one.
Well, if I'd done a bad job in work and consistently, I'd probably get sacked. So I think, it's a business at the end of the day. And if you're not performing, then, you should be let go. But I think why we haven't done her in the past is because we've always had that one extra player. So, you know, like, you can just swap the line out in and out, and then sometimes it gives players boost. Like, if you take, I know Matt Pup didn't have a great year last year, all year, but you take the playoffs where, like, just before the playoffs is, you know, he got taken off the power play, his minutes reduced, and you see him play a couple of games in the playoffs, and, you know, I know it was a bigger game and a big occasion. We did turn it on and assist on two of the game-winning goals in both the semi-final and final. So I think it's kind of an incentive to always have that extra player in case someone does dip in form, and you can, you, like, not threaten them by reducing ice time and stuff, but no, you, like, know what I'm saying. But if I was in, you know, you just got to be ruthless in a game like this. Like, you see at the end of every year, like, you don't always keep the players you want to keep, and I think if they're underperforming through the year, then the players got to go. And if you take, you know, Mike Edding, for instance, if we got rid of him halfway through the year and potentially brought in someone who was going to play at 100%, do we win that game in Coventry? I think so.
Okay, fair point. Paul, just going to put it over to you now, but in terms of the reputation, when you sort of see that side of things, like, you know, we haven't released a player for, you know, the entire time of the new regime, do you think that in terms of reputation, that is a good thing or a bad thing? Because in a sense, it allows you to go out there and say to players, look, we treat our players the right way. We've never let a guy go. Does it show that the club is a good place to be, or does it show that it possibly is a soft touch and you're guaranteed a job for a year? How do you view that, and how would you approach it differently, if at all?
I sitting nicely on the fence. I think both sides of that are equally true. In that, reputationally, it is massively beneficial to us. I think on balance, it is much more of a benefit than a negative. You think if your reputation is that good that players want to play for you, and, you know, if a few teams are in from the Elite League, and you've got feedback from probably just about every player that's gone through the club over the last 5 years giving good recommendations to friends, whereas, you know, teams with a higher turnover of players or players that don't seem to want to stick around for more than one season or so at a time, you're going to get better players in. And the bigger your pool, the pickier you can be. So the club always talk about the interviews that Andrew Lord does on the phone with players, the extensive references that we get. You know, that shows how much of a talent pool that we've got, that we can be that picky over personalities. I think there might be clubs where we could have five players of, I'm trying to think of any, like Mayumaki standing ready to come in, and we just choose the one with the best references, whereas other clubs might only have one of those players available of the quality. So you've just got to take a gamble on their personality. I think overall it's a good thing. You know, if you get the signing wrong, then yeah, you are opening yourself up to players taking the mick out of you. Based on Pat Vance's question earlier, is the club able to sack them? I think the days of 2 week notices are clearly long gone. Your players are under contract and can't just walk out. You know, look at Ben Blood. There was an agreement done between Tapara and the Devils that notice period clearly isn't there. So it's protected us on that side in that instance, that, you know, the club got what they needed out of the deal to be able to release him. I don't even know whether the contract would allow to release just because someone's underperforming. Obviously, if someone's coming in, starting fights, not showing up for training, drink, you know, anything that's, you know, that would get
gross,
us that
gross, job mis- yeah, one, gross misconduct,
then 100% get them gone. I think the club would be more than justified in that. And I don't think in a situation like that, it would damage our rep, because I think we've got such a strong reputation that if someone gets cut, I think most players are going to think, wow, there's a good reason for that. That's probably my take on it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair way to look at it. And I think the gross misconduct thing is probably, like, I suppose, like you said, that does set a bit of pretty high bar for some. It takes a lot to, you know, get yourself the sack from the Cardiff Devils. So,
and you know, it's same if it's, you know, if it's not showing up to training, that you've been warned about it four times and you've had three warnings, then full strike. And however, the club will have HR policies, and it doesn't have to be one event. If it's an ongoing accumulation, then again, get them out.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Happy with that. I hope we've answered Lewis's question on that. We also had another burning question from Kevin Hampson at KevJH52. How do you feel about the new guys? Personally, I think McMonagle hasn't impressed. Seems to give the puck up too easily in the defence. Hopefully he picks up soon. I'm going to go first on this one. And I'm with you, Kev. I do agree. McMonagle hasn't stood out for me. He's been a slight concern. I think he does offer a lot going forward and offensively. But I think it does take a bit of an adjustment for a guy to get used to a new league, a new style. And I think he's definitely got the talent, and it's just a case of us sticking with him and working on it. You look at Bryce Reddick in his first year, myself and other fans, I always hold my hands up and say I was one of those people that didn't think that Bryce Reddick was good enough for us and that he was our worst import and we should have, you know, looked elsewhere. And at the start of this, and I was absolutely hands up wrong. At the start of the off season this year, he'd have been one of my first players to come back. And I think that just shows that it's not always, you know, easy to settle. Reddick had a bit of an adjustment period, and now he's one of our go-to defensemen. And I think McMonagle's got it in him to do that. Whether he will or not, who knows? But that's my thoughts on it. Aaron, you, what do you think?
I agree with Kev. For me, McMonagle is a defensive liability at the moment. He does offer a bit of offensive upside, but I think that what could potentially benefit him is maybe a jiggle around of the D pairings. But like you said, Johnny, he's just got to find his feet. And I know we've been together and you've been on the big ice for a while now, but it's still an adjustment period. He's still got to get used to new systems, like new ways of playing. You know, he's playing a lot of minutes as well. Power play, penalty kill, and also regular minutes. And, you know, maybe he's not used to doing things like that. And you just got to give the guy a chance. You know, if in a month or two he's still in the same way, then, you know, I'll probably be calling for his head. But definitely just needs an adjustment period. I think give him a couple more weeks and I'm sure he'll find his feet.
Just to add, I think the issues that McGonagall's having is you probably show them really well in our two CHL away games. He, for me, had an absolute nightmare in the game against Mountfield. And yeah, I think the biggest characteristic that you could say Mountfield had was high forecheck, absolutely zero time for the Devils on the puck wherever we had the puck. And then he looked absolutely outstanding in Graz, where we had all the time in the world on the puck pretty much from the get-go. And I think that seems to be his really big weakness. I guess the leagues he's played in don't have that high forecheck, high pressuring style that Mountfield played, but also that a lot of elite league teams, you know, do. You know, we're quite a frenetic league. You don't get loads and loads of time a lot of the time. And yeah, that seems to be where he struggles the most for me, where he's either under pressure or is expecting people under pressure quickly and just doesn't seem to be able to adjust. And, you know, as you said, Sean, the skills there, you see it. he takes a penalty shot. He has a wraparound goal on a power play in Graz, where he's got that little bit of time and he can just think about it. Everything's great and it looks quite easy for him. But when he's under pressure, that seems to be more of a difficulty. And you know, hopefully that is just an adaption from what he's used to. And you know, his brain just kicks into a gear where he's able to make those judgments just that little bit quicker. But you know, that's my big concern with him, that I don't necessarily think it's systems. I think it's he seems to struggle where he hasn't got a lot of time to make a decision.
Is that down to, do you think that probably boils down to confidence as well? You know, he's coming through this league as well, where I know not all of the mistakes have been in these places, but he seems to struggle noticeably in Coventry on the road, where it's obviously a smaller ice surface. You've got to go to Manchester, you know, a couple of these rinks with the smaller surfaces. Is that somewhere where, you know, when we do return back to full fitness, you would look to utilise the return of Evan Mosey in that building, maybe set out McMonagall in that sort of department? Or do you hope that by then he's adjusted and we can depend on him by then?
I totally hope that it's all over by the time Evan Mosey's fit, whenever that's due to be. But yeah, if that still was the issue, if it still seems to be that pressure, quick pressure is causing me issues, then 100% Manchester isn't the rink to be playing anyone who's like that. And if we've got, you know, even if Mosey wasn't fit, if he was in that situation, I'd be thinking about dropping Batch back and putting all our forwards on. You know, I think if you have any problems with having a lack of time on the puck, you do not set foot on the ice in Manchester if you've got a choice. And obviously Kev's question, you know, was a little bit wider about our thoughts on, you know, all of the players. Aaron, are you happy with everyone else, the way they're settling in? Any standouts for you?
Yeah, for me, Jardine's probably one of the standouts, one we've seen most of. Does pretty much everything right, got a bit of a nasty edge about him. You know, it's everything that the coach said we was going to expect, and he's a proven winner, and he seems to, you know, he really impressed me from day one. So McNamee, I think,
stud,
class, absolute class. One of the better ones slotted right in. Maya Mackey for me is a little bit off. I like the energy he brings to the game and stuff. Great forecheck, plays hard, skates hard, but I think the way he plays right now isn't feasible for his minutes, so maybe that needs to be looked at. Does take quite a few penalties as well, but then, you know, it's a learning period, it's new to the league. But McMonagall, you know, we just discussed him. Riley, injured, but you know, I was in love with him since he was in Belfast. So yeah, I'm really, really happy with the new guys. Hopefully McMonagall picks it up a little bit and we can go from it.
Excellent. And just from my point of view, you know, Mari Mackey, I loved straight away, and you agree with you. I think a bit of a dip, but he had a standout performance in Sheffield and was selected by the fans on the coach as the man of the match. And so, you know, it is early days. You know, we're into October, but we've not had that many games domestically. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that everyone's performing well. The majority, I think, Sean, the group of new players is performing above expectations, which I think we've discussed previously already.
For sure, yeah. I think we've only played three league games as well. So, yeah, there's plenty of time to get things fixed up.
Yep. So thank you, everyone, for your burning questions and your Armites. Please do keep them coming in. As we said, it's great to be able to talk about the things that you want us to talk about rather than us trying to think of things. So just looking around the league, in terms of news, not a lot. Sheffield have made a new signing, but we can't talk about a new Sheffield signing or release every time they change their roster, because we'll quickly become a Sheffield podcast. So you get another new player in Sheffield. So there we go. Let's talk about the future of standing, and there have been a few developments this week and today especially. So Devils yesterday on Tuesday announced if 75 people signed up for the standing area, bam, it's permanent. We've got a standing area. Bit of a change today with the stance of another three-game trial with a couple of league games and the Frölunda home game. Or domestic, I'm not sure if they're both league. And then there's a few games where they can't do it because of group bookings, and then it'll, after that, people have a decision to stay for the season or not. But the swayer for me was that if you decide you don't like it at the end of the season, if you do stay, you've got first dibs on getting your current season ticket seat back. And my big fear was it'll be great for a little bit and then it'll fizzle out as the season goes on. And as soon as that was confirmed by the club that, you know, if come March I'm hating it or it's not working or if it's just died a death by then, I'm not losing my seat. I love my seat. I've been there since the rink opened. So I've got that option. And then obviously I've got a decision to make going forward. But, you know, and it seems from looking at Twitter, that's been a deal breaker for so many people that are now saying, I'm in. And, you know, I think it's growing and, you know, expecting a massive take up for the next few games. Sean, I'm sure you're really pleased at it carrying on and, you know, hopefully looking for the trial to be successful and this to be in place for the season.
Yeah, my biggest qualm with the way that the Devils went about it was, I think 24 hours is not a great deal of time for you to make a decision like that. And I know that we've got a game this week on Saturday, and it is going to take some admin. I would have rather that they'd said, look, you know, if they waited until the weekend without a standing section, and then, or in advance of it, said, we need to know by next Wednesday so that people had a week to, you know, realise how bad the atmosphere may be on Saturday and that they needed to get involved in the standing section again. But I think they've just nailed it. They've done it perfectly. And Paul, you obviously enjoyed the standing section, but in terms of a permanent thing, yourself and a number of other people were a bit cautious about, like you said, losing your seat was a major, major thing. And if it didn't work, you didn't want to be. And I think then that scared people to not, you know, take the plunge. But this little safety net now allows you to take that plunge, and hopefully it works, and hopefully it's something you want to keep doing. And I think they've just done it perfectly, to be quite honest. And they've basically given you, you know, instead of giving you 24 hours, they've given you however many months to sort of make a decision based on what happens as well. So if it does come a permanent thing, I genuinely think that they couldn't have done it better now, looking back on the result, on the release today.
Yeah, I think that he's talking about the timings. I think the club's hands were maybe a little bit forced by the likes of Andrew Littleton and a few of the players instantly tweeting how they wanted the same again, if not more, for this weekend. So, you know, it's very difficult then, I guess, for the club to put a press release out saying, yeah, we know Laura wants it, but actually we're not going to bother. So, you know, I think they've scrambled and, you know, probably thought about it more as that time went on and realised that those little things were what were causing concerns. And, you know, as ever, the club's addressed concerns and you've done everything they can to resolve it. And it's just time like that. You just really appreciate the people that work in the office and, you know, the way the clubs run, that these things do seem to matter to them and are acted on. And it's just really nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Rose tinted specs, Devils. Yeah. Conversation.
Aaron, you're going to get involved at some stage?
Yeah, I will be looking at, I may purchase a ticket for a Frölunda game. It's hard for me because, you know, I'm a quite ignorant fan. it's really hard to, like, hold a conversation with me when the hockey's on, and, you know, I literally switch off. You know, I get so invested and things like that it's, you know, people next to me just are having a conversation with me, even about the game, and I'm just, like, nodding my head saying yeah or whatever because, you know, I'm fixated on the hockey. So, you know, plus, I love my seat. Like Paul, I've been there since day one. And to be honest, if I ever leave or we get a new rink, that seat's coming home with me. So, I will get involved every now and then, you know, for the big games and stuff. But for now, I think I'm too attached to my seat, my view.
Mm.
And, yeah, you know, I hope it carries on because, you know, it was a good atmosphere during the second period. Mm. You know, I think you could mix up the songs a little bit next time. You know, heard a little bit of variety, but, yeah. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, well, come and give us a hand.
Maybe, if you're lucky.
Go on, Paul.
I was just, my one thing after the game was like, well, that LA, you know, it started, I think, with about 12 minutes left, if not a little bit more. I think it could have had a couple of songs in the middle and then gone back and finished with it. It was nice to have that continuous chant, and it was fun. But yeah, just for terms of people not joining in, I think it's just a better atmosphere if you've got a mix of songs, mix of beats, mm. mix of noise. And, you know, obviously we'll have the new drum beats for LA this weekend, Sean.
Yeah. And I think it comes from the fact that we have got another opportunity to switch it up and do it better. I know that it may have been a whole, you know, based on the occasion and people, you know, going for the one-off thing and that may have been why it was loud. But I just think that you can work on it and do things differently. A lot of the feedback was that people couldn't understand the words. I understand the club are doing something to get the chants out to the rest of the arena. So hopefully that can be can have a positive impact on the atmosphere and get everyone involved. And like you said, I think the reason that it just stuck for 15 minutes or so was because it just kept getting louder and louder and louder. And I think that level of noise that came from the block was sort of, no one wanted to stop just in general having noise and risk that by starting something different. So yeah, it was exciting though. It was a great, great night and looking forward to doing it all again.
Indeed we are, and we will do it all again when Manchester comes to town on Saturday in a league game. Manchester, you know, always a tricky proposition, a team that, you know, massively built for, not, you know, not disrespectfully saying that they're built for their home ice. You know, we did it for years. You know, having a rink that small, it can be an advantage if you use it right. And you know, they definitely do. They've picked up some big wins at home this weekend in the Challenge Cup against Sheffield. An overtime win a couple of weekends back against Belfast as well at home. Actually, looking at this, they've also beaten Dundee at home. So they've got three wins all at home, but they've not won an away game in Cup or League so far. So, you know, a team that are picking up their points at home. And, you know, Cardiff's a big ice pad, Aaron, and you know, perhaps not best suited to Manchester, but, you know, surely a team to be aware of. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to come to it anyway, but obviously the return of a certain Aynolmer as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to be difficult for Manchester, you know, us having the standing block, you know, and players wanting to get out there and go for it. I do think that Manchester are going to be, you know, Alma will have a, you know, playing you for three years. You know, he knows the ice pad inside out. I think he'll have possibly a game plan. You know, the leader that he is, he'll probably have a game plan in place right for the team. Whether in Folsom is a different story, but it'll be a difficult game for him. I can't see them beating us. But hopefully it'll prove for an entertaining game. You know, Finity usually always puts a entertaining team together, so let's see what he brings.
And, you know, as Aaron said, you know, the return of Aynolmer, a proper face-off specialist, Sean. Would you be, if he's fit, looking to pair him with McNamee maybe in the dock, in the circle, to take away any advantage you might have from training sessions?
It'll be weird to see Aynolmer playing on Cardiff Ice in totally different colours. We'll be looking out for Aaron breaking his heart, crying into his burger and chips. But, yeah, it's, I'm really interested to see what Manchester do this year, because they seem to have got a couple of really, really good players. Obviously, Leon Ulma is a brilliant addition to them in terms of just their experience and offensive upside. And they've obviously got his brother-in-law as well. I think it's Olin, his name, from memory. So they...
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah.
Olin, yeah. So they, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what they've put together, and the return also of Matthew Gagnon to the rink in Cardiff, who didn't do too well in Nottingham in his last year. So yeah, it's always interesting to see how much a team has changed over the course of the summer. Whether they're still, you know, a goon squad, or whether they've actually got some go in them this year. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Hey, mentioning are they a goon squad, I wonder if almost fighting Nottingham last year was what sealed the deal for him going to Storm. This is a guy, proper scrapper. Yeah, but him and Pauling look pretty good so far, and you know, scored a couple of neat goals from watching their highlights. So definitely room to be aware. Oh joy, we're going to preview a Coventry game for what is just happens every week on the show. We're going to Coventry. We're playing the Challenge Cup. Last time we went there in the Challenge Cup, we sucked. Then we beat them in the Challenge Cup at home this weekend, and we didn't suck. So, hey, something's going to happen, and that's Coventry. And then it's Frölunda away. We're going to Frölunda.
Whoa, we're going to Frölunda. Don't know why I did that.
We are.
I can't even say it, but yeah.
I was hovering over the bleeper. Well done, Aaron. We're not only are we going to Frölunda, which is just great, and you know, still the CHL hockey, pinching yourself at the quality of teams that we play and you know, travel to. We're going to Frölunda as the top team in the group, and we're going to Frölunda needing a regulation win to qualify, and with a load of other ways that we can do it. But I just, the fact that we can even talk about beating Frölunda in regulation is crazy. I don't see it happening. Sean, your thoughts on the game coming up?
I'm just excited to go to the last road CHL game and have something riding on it, because we weren't here last year. We didn't do it the year before. And yeah, it's exciting. It's a new city. It's a new team. Really, really looking forward to it. An absolute stack of Devil fans going out. I think I've read that there's around 140, 150 going out there. So that'll be crazy. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. Do I expect to win? No, absolutely no chance. But I didn't expect us to win in Gratz or in Mountfield. So stranger things have happened. I'd love to say that we will come back already qualified for the next stage of the Champions Hockey League. Don't expect it. But totally intend on enjoying every single second of being, you know, in Gothenburg playing against the team that's won the CHL God knows how many times, and they're the reigning champions as well. So yeah, can't wait. Really looking forward to it.
And Aaron, you know, as you said, game in, you know, potentially a different position for the Devils, you're travelling to a CHL game, you're nowhere near as the favourites, but you know, as the team to topple from the top of the group, do you think that potentially changes the way the team approaches the game?
Yeah, I'm not expecting to win, but I genuinely think we'll go over there with this this kind of swag and this aura about us. You know, we won three or four games so far against top competition, and they weren't just, you know, easy games where we blew them away, or games where we hang on till the last minute and then scored. It's games that we were really competitive in and probably won. You know, out of the, you know, all the games we played, we're probably the better team. And I 100%, I don't think we'll win, but I think we're fully capable of winning. You know, we've got a lot more games under our belts. systems more in place. You know, it looks like a team that could be put together. Hopefully, we'll have a couple of guys back in the lineup. You know, and yeah, let's just go for it. If we can play fast, if we can keep up with them for as long as we can, you know, we give ourselves an hell of a chance. And I think the fact that we can, you know, we got two chances to qualify, and if we can just get a result out of just one of those, you know, buzzing, absolutely buzzing. But, you know, let's just get it done away so we can have a party at home.
How very nice that would be. And, you know, the way we sit, it's, you know, Mountfield can take one more point than us and we'll still qualify. And if we get one point, Gratz can't catch us. So there's all sorts of, you know, permutations there. So Gratz and Mountfield obviously also play on Tuesday. So there's a few ways it could all shake out. Yeah, just a massive thing. You know, it's going to be weird going into a CHL game, potentially nervous, Sean, because we're not just going into the game as an underdog and if we get a win, we get a win. We're going in with our eyes on a much bigger prize now that we've always wanted to get out of the group, but all of a sudden it's a tangible thing.
Yeah, of course, it's a real, real possibility, and it's crazy to think how far we have come in the CHL. Just to see, we're just light years ahead of where we were when we went to Davos and got absolutely obliterated. And it's just exciting. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Just not being a dead rubber. For London have something to, they have to, you know, gain something out of it. They need some points, so they're gonna have to be good, and we're gonna have to be even better, and probably play the game of our lives. If we win in for London, it'll be one of the biggest games in Dell's history, and why not? Just why not? There's always a chance of it happening. Very little, but I won't be disappointed if we come out of that game having got absolutely hammered, because we have no business going there and winning. Not many teams do. I think Gratz and Mountfield won the, correct me if I'm wrong though, in the early stages of the CHL. Yeah, both teams came away with a win. So, you know, it may have been that Philander weren't overly bothered by the competition then. They probably put a weakened team out, and the other teams went hell for leather against them to get a result. So they're probably a bit more prep for this. They know that they need to get something out of it. But why not? I bet Gratz never thought they would go in and win Mountfield the same. So yeah, who's to say we can't do it too?
Let's. I'm almost disappointed we've got hockey this weekend before it. Always on that. Hopefully that's just going to be me and the fans and, you know, the team. You know, it is a potential distraction for the team, Aaron, that, you know, this big game on the horizon, but, you know, two important domestic games first. It'll be important for the Devils to keep their focus.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's still, for me, it's still one game at a time. You know, get Manchester out of the way, get Coventry out of the way, and then we can worry about for London then, and, you know, just go hell for leather in all three games. Try and get a W. If we can, you know, if we get two wins from the weekend, you know, boost full of confidence. You know, like I said, we'll have our swag about us. We'll have a little bit of confidence, you know, and why not? Why can't we go there? Everyone's got a puncher's chance, and, you know, if you take the opportunities given to you, then it's doable. So let's just go for it.
Just a quick question for the two of you. We obviously go to Coventry on Sunday. Are you sitting a couple of guys out for rest? Are you giving Tom Murdy a game? What's your approach to that ahead of the CHL game?
Well, I'm seeing he's got a knock. What? Like that. Anyone who's, you know, got any sort of niggling doubt, any injury, not anything they're a little bit concerned about, sit them on Sunday. Like if we play, you know, less. Not play with two lines. Everyone's knackered, but if we've got a couple of guys that aren't 100%, they're 98%, then maybe dress them and don't ice them even. It's, you know, the bound situation's weird. It looks like Murdy's not going to be getting a lot of ice time, if any, this year. Either through the club or Bounds' choice. But, you know, I think that we all shared our opinion on how we would treat the Challenge Cup and our goalie situation, but it doesn't seem to be in accordance with what the club are going to be doing. Aaron, are you of a similar mindset, or do you think sort of getting that win on Sunday is more important and, you know, get as many guys out there as we can?
I think it'd be silly to burn that much energy. You know, we've got travel as well. It would benefit us to get a couple of guys, you know, rested, full of energy, ready for the CHL. But, you know, it'd be nice if Murdy can get a start or even low day, but I can't see it happening. You know, Bounds is too competitive, I think. We just have to see how it goes. But it's going to be an awkward one. You know, are we going to see if Riley's fit? Are we going to give him a game so we can, you know, get back up to speed? Are we going to play Martin to get him back up? You know, I know he's already played two games, but is he going to be a guy that plays? You know, are we going to see more of the bottom six over the top six? It's just, you know, that's why Coach Lord got the hardest job in hockey, and, you know, you got to make all these decisions. Bedder's head is rattling right now and thinking about it. So, you know, he could listen to us and take some pointers, which he probably won't because none of us know what we're on about. But, you know, he'll do what's best for the club, and it is what it is, really.
Hey, just very briefly, you know, if we can get Matt and me and Riley fit, obviously only one of them can come into the team for domestic action, but if fit, both can play against Philander as well, and, you know, what a massive boost that'll be to really give us some depth going into that game. So, worth noting with travel for getting over to Philander, there's a few games going to happen before we are next on air. We've got a crazy schedule in that we play Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday for Philander. Then on the Thursday, we're home to Dundee in league action. And then on the Sunday, we're in Coventry for league action again. So at least we're not going to have to preview another Coventry game. rinse and repeat what I just said. We then play Philander at home on the Tuesday, the 15th. So if we can get a podcast out on the 14th, we will, but there's a chance that we'll next be coming when we know our fate in the CHL. So, yeah, it's going to be a week off for us, definitely. Sorry, guys. We've done three in a row. We deserve it. Let's take a break, boys. this is an unheard-of level of podcasting, so we'll have to give ourselves some time off. But loads to talk about when we come back, but we still will want your burning questions. We'll still want your arm mites. Submit them as and when you think of them, but, you know, as long as we remember, we'll tweet out and ask you for them. Thank you all for listening. Fingers crossed for the CHL. Let's get through to that last 16. But for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devil inside.